Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
On The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. It is, it's the Atkins version of The Advertising Show because you're probably on a diet, right? So we're low in carbohydrates.
Are you speaking to the audience or me?
And high in, no, I'm talking to the audience.
Oh, okay.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, we're back here. We've got Bernice Canner. She's a marketing expert and an author of many books. The one we're going to talk about, the 100 Best TV Commercials and Why They Worked. And we also have another one, too. It's called the Super Bowl of Advertising. And, of course, it's not yet the Super Bowl weekend, but
week before.
We can do that. Well, actually, a couple weeks before.
I believe, not next. Well, it would be the first.
It's 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's 2 weeks. We're on the 17th here, so that would be 2 weeks.
That's right. Do the math.
Okay. So, Anyway, we've got Patrick Meyer on the way. Let's see. Word of mouth. Patrick's going to talk about word of mouth. Lots of advertisers say, well, I don't do any advertising. I do word of mouth. Well, this is a little bit different twist on that. We've got Mary Lou Quinlan, who's going to talk about those snappy little deals at the end of the year that make people want to go out and buy stuff. That's called holiday shopping. She'll be with us next hour. Andy Borowitz is going to be here, too. So.
And advertising.
Well, that's true. Very true, this hour. Have we forgotten anything? Yes, we did. The Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing with who?
And if we could do the weather with Bruce Abbott, our executive producer, if we could do the weather, well, we can do the weather. It's cold up north and warm down south with a chance of rain.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
And
so,
you know, I don't know if you caught this, Ray, but this was one of these deals that I came across for the show, and it was like, is this for real? Yes, it is for real. I got it. Where did I get this? I got this from Brandweek, brandweek.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it says the Department of Homeland Security recently launched the Hispanic leg of a national campaign on how citizens should prepare for terrorist attacks and other emergencies.
Okay.
They just recently launched that. So
really?
I guess it's time to let the Hispanics in on this terror deal.
Hey. Be aware.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Well, under the theme, preparing makes sense, get ready now. The effort advises people to prepare emergency kits with 3 days of food, water, and medical supplies, develop a family communication plan, and be informed about what to do in the event of a disaster.
Okay.
This is interesting. Here we're quoting Secretary Tom Ridge. It is essential that everyone get the message because with terrorism, there are often no second chances. Now, are we a little late in informing the Hispanics about the terrorism, what to do?
Has anybody addressed any of the other ethnic groups, possibly?
I think they've got the Asians on the drawing board.
Is that, that's coming up later, right around election time.
This multicultural marketing is a new concept for the government, I suppose.
Well, there's a lot of new things that the government hasn't done yet, right? That's another show, though.
Such as catch you for your tax matters. That would be one.
There you go.
No.
Got that Swiss bank account.
Yeah.
Right? There we go. Let's get Patrick Meyer on right now. We've got a great segment with him coming up right now.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Recently in Ad Age, there was an article by Scott Donatan, someone I have great respect for, and he raised the issue of figuring out word of mouth and the fact that marketers are clamoring to get the answer. He's totally right, but I'm going to expand a little bit more on what he said. It's more than just word of mouth. It's about connecting it to driving your business. It's about creating buzz that allows the consumer to be your number one marketing tool. Here are a couple things to consider as you set off to build word of mouth. Number one, it all has to start with a strategy. You need to lay out exactly what you want to deliver to the consumer, what your point of difference is, and then drive it home through word of mouth. Number two, you need to understand what your story is, because out of the story is the mythology, and out of that comes the word of mouth. Number three, you need to have a different form of marketing plan, because buzz can't exist on its own. So you need to create a marketing plan. It's an episodic plan, a series of episodes across the year, 4 to 6 episodes. Out of that and inside of that, you need to create brand buzz generating tactics. Number four, you need to know how to spin You need to make sure that when you do something that's cool that people talk about, that it spins out even further. So to have 1,000 people in one section of the country aware of something cool that happened doesn't build your business. But to have it picked up by the media, now all of a sudden you've got millions of people that are seeing it and aware of what the buzz is. And lastly, you need to make sure that when you do word of mouth, that it's all part of a bigger picture and people are constantly talking about your brand.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer, and remember, the marketing revolution has begun.
Yes, it has. And Patrick's leading the way, as a matter of fact, I think, right?
Yeah.
Patrick Meyer on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings, along with Brad Forsyth, and our special guest, Bernice Kanner, coming up here in just a few moments. We've got about 3 minutes before the break here. Hey, did you, several years ago, if you would have gone to the bank and said, listen, I need at least $1.5 million, or maybe a couple million, because I want to sell ringtones to people and, you know, for their cell phones and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And the bank probably would have thrown you out in your ear, right?
Right.
So what are you, crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear the cell phone ringtone sales have hit $3.5 billion sales of the ringtones?
Mm.
The tiny song recordings programmed in the millions of handsets around the world. That's from CNN Money. They had that. Worldwide sale of ringtones, it started as a marketing gimmick for the music labels and mobile phone companies, roughly equivalent to 10% of the $32.2 billion global music market. So they're making some money off that. Isn't that amazing?
We had a guest, over a year ago, that was telling us about the advent of ringtones and that there was going to be a lot of growth in that area. So apparently she was right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Let's see here. Forecast sales remain brisk through 2008 when downloads will top $5.2 billion.
You're stupid me. I've been using the one that comes with my phone.
Oh, thank you, because I hate ringtone. I hate songs on cell phones.
I think it kind of gives you a little insight to the person if you are sitting there and they're playing on their ringtone certain ringtones.
Right.
You sit back and go, what kind of person would actually use that ringtone for their phone?
Well, enough that it wouldn't equate to $3.5 billion.
Exactly.
I do. I'm not a big fan of ringtones, but obviously somebody is.
Well, and you know, a few weeks ago we talked about advertising displayed on your cell phone, which will be happening soon, maybe in the U.S. I know it's happening right now in Europe. So,
well, our cell phones are all web-enabled, yours as well as mine. So
right.
I see that that whole thing coming together.
It's web-enabled, but do you use it? I don't.
No, never have.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure it'd be nice. And mine also has a 911 GPS chip in it, basically, so that if you're stuck somewhere, they can tell you where you're at.
Have you used it?
No, I hope I never have to.
Oh, you have to be lost.
Yeah, you have
I
to be lost.
I see what you're saying. Hey, you know, the NFL and CBS has announced that MTV, we mentioned this a few weeks ago, will be producing the halftime show for the Super Bowl 28 coming up on February 1st.
Right.
Sponsored by AOL. MTV produced last year's Super Bowl halftime show, which you may recall featured Aerosmith, NSYNC, Britney Spears, Nelly, and Mary J. Blige.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about this is some listeners emailed and said, why would CBS have MTV producing it? Of course, we all know Viacom owns CBS.
Well, that's all one
MTV.
Big happy family now.
Right.
Yeah, right.
It might be easier to say what Viacom doesn't own,
that's
as far
like,
as media properties.
Well, you know, the guy from Nick at Night, we had Nick at Night. They run a cartoon series on Saturday mornings on ABC.
TV Land.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Back in just a minute, and we've got our special guest, Bernice Kanner, coming up on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
What do you mean you can't return the car, sir? Was it stolen?
No, sir.
You had an accident, right?
Well, I kind of. No. I did it on purpose.
What did you do, sir?
Well, you remember when I came in to rent the car and
yeah.
I insisted? I made a fuss about it being a Camaro.
Yes, I remember.
Remember, it had to be a Camaro because I really wanted to impress a very special lady. We're going to drive through the Redwoods. Well, she was impressed.
Right, okay.
I picked her up and the first thing she said was, wow, now that's a Chevy. So I said, Camaro. And she said, yeah. And, you know, the more we drove, the more impressed she got. She couldn't stop talking about the Camaro.
Yeah, okay.
She was really impressed by the car and me. She was talking about me and the car, me, the car. So I gave it to her.
What would you give her?
I gave her your Camaro.
What do you intend to do about that?
Well, I did have unlimited mileage, didn't I?
Camaro. Wow. Now that's a Chevy.
You know, that's a Chuck Blore spot from several years back, and you might remember that. Chuck Blore, one of the classic advertising greats of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and the 2000s, too.
Great talent.
Good stuff from Chuck Blore with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth here on The Advertising Show. And our special guest today is Bernice Canner. Bernice is in New York, and Bernice is a marketing expert, an author, an editor. She's been associated with Bloomberg LP since 1994. As a columnist for radio, television, and print, and is a syndicated columnist for Screaming Media, she became editor-in-chief of Women's Business in September of 2002. The 1999 book, The 100 Best TV Commercials, which we mentioned just a few moments ago, is one of the many books that she's written. Her Super Bowl, The Super Bowl of Advertising, How the Commercials Won the Game, being published by Bloomberg Press. And we're going to talk about that and many of the other accomplishments. Bernice, thanks for taking time out of your weekend and to be here with us on The Advertising Show.
My pleasure.
You know, Bernice, I must say, we have a picture here on your bio, and you are the most attractive woman in the studio at this very moment.
Well, what competition do I have?
Me and Ray.
Yeah.
Well.
And, of course, Ray just had that pre-op, post-op operation, and so Jeez. He's still looking good, though.
Like the Holiday Inn commercial.
Actually, you're a very handsome woman, and it's not often that we get an opportunity to bring some attractiveness to the show, but what you also bring to the show is your wonderful background. And as Ray read your bio, I'm just curious, before we jump into talking about the Super Bowl of Advertising, which I found is a very interesting book, how does a self-proclaimed marketing expert come up to begin writing a book entitled Are You Normal? About Sex, Love, and Relationships?
Well, I'm not a, quote, self-proclaimed marketing expert. I'm a proclaimed marketing expert from other people putting that label on.
I got you.
Well, got that validity thing. That's good.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, it's an outgrowth of a book I did in 1995 called Are You Normal? Based on research that Leo Burnett had done, asking things like, when you come to a yellow light, do you step on the gas? Do you reach behind the first milk in the dairy case for the fresher one? How about in your wallet? Are your dollar bills organized denominationally? And this was because they had the largest research department in America. And I said, well, put it to the test and find out how America really lives.
Hmm.
So the second book is actually an outgrowth of that, using EuroRSCG's research, as well as many other ad agencies, in finding out whether it's okay for mom to set you up on a date, or where at work would you do it if you did it.
Hmm.
So it's all the fabric of our lives, if you would, if I can borrow a cotton ink.
And if you did do it at work, what was the number one response?
Well, we're talking about Super Bowl now. We're not talking about sex.
I just love the program Sue Johansson, which is Sunday Night Sex Talk. You familiar with that show?
No, I'm not.
Well, you're going to have to tune it in. If you have digital cable, that's way up there in the 300s.
Yes, it is.
On Oxygen. But, okay, well, let's jump into the Super Bowl. A little bit about that. How did you come up with the idea for the book, the Super Bowl?
Well, as you mentioned, the 100 Best TV Commercials and Why They Worked was really a celebration of great advertising. And in researching that, I discovered that so many of these ads had run on the Super Bowl. And more, when you're watching this industry, you realize that this is the high holy day of the industry. This is Easter, Christmas, Kwanzaa. Every day thrown into one is for this industry. The Super Bowl is it. And the reason is that the Olympics run for a couple of weeks, and the playoffs in baseball take a week. The World Series, you could have 7 games, whereas the football event is one event. It's one day. So they've crammed the entire cacophony of what's important for marketing into this one day. So that interested me. The fact that it gets more and more attention every year, that a cottage industry seems to have sprung up around it, has interested me.
Well, you know, I was surprised that there had not been a book written on the Super Bowl of advertising, or perhaps there has been. In your research, did you find any previous books?
I did not find any, which is why I decided to plunge in.
Mm-hmm. And you published this. Remind our listeners, this was published when?
Just now, in December.
Okay, good. So all of the information. Did any of your top 100 best TV commercials from your previous book make it into your advertising Super Bowl book?
Oh, indeed. Mm-hmm. 1972, Coca-Cola did I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing. They launched that on the Super Bowl. And 2 years later, Mean Joe Green was launched on the Super Bowl. Bartles and James were Super Bowl fixtures. Certainly the Budweiser commercials have been Super Bowl greats, as well as Pepsi.
Yeah, and of course, I see in your book you also had a foreword written by Phil Dusenberry and Ted Sam, both of BBDO. We had Phil Dusenberry, former chairman of BBDO, on the show. What was it, Ray? A year and a half or so.
Just about so, yeah, right.
And he talked about, of course, for those that may not know, Phil was very much involved in the development of all of the Pepsi stuff because he comes up from the creative department and ended up running BBDO worldwide. You mentioned Coca-Cola and that spot that we all remember, Teach the World to Sing, or whatever you want to call it. But you know what we're talking about.
It's called Hilltop officially.
Hilltop is the title?
Mm-hmm. And it's by the Hilltop Singers. Yes.
No, not really. Was it really?
It was a song that was a popular hit song.
Well, we're going to get in. I've got some trivia questions for Bernice, but staying with the Coke spot. That really, Bernice, you correct me if I'm wrong, but was that the first spot that really was taking a very dramatic and more, I don't know, high production value in terms of investment of the advertiser for a Super Bowl spot?
I don't know that it was the first. And that one wasn't specifically designed for the Super Bowl. That was part of Coke's regular commercial. It ran time and again. Mm-hmm. The first commercial that was really just a Super Bowl play that really raised the stakes was 1984 by Apple.
Right, and that brings up a question that I had for you. I've often wondered if the strategy, frankly, was sound when Apple aired their now famous 1984 Super Bowl spot for Macintosh because, I don't know, they spent a lot of money, as you've already identified, in promoting that spot. They certainly created a lot of buzz leading into it. But so often we see commercials, and the Macintosh spot is an example of that, that are designed specifically for the Super Bowl, and you never see it again. Is that such smart strategy?
Well, in the case of Apple, it was brilliant strategy. It was a one-time event, and it actually said on January 24th, you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was particularly designed as a one-shot.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, the commercial never said what the product was or what it was for, and yet the day after the Super Bowl, Apple was thronged. They sold many, many, many times the amount that they had anticipated. There are other commercials that the dot-com bowl, for example, were just throwaways of money, really reckless and arrogant. But I don't think that the Apple Macintosh commercial was that at all.
Well, I got some dot-com questions for you, and we'll do it right after the break.
That's very true.
Yeah.
That's very true. On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings, along with Brad Forsyth, our special guest Bernice Kanner, talking about, among many things, the Super Bowl of advertising, how the commercials won the game. Super Bowl, of course, is on the way. You know, you talk about that Apple spot, too, guys. They're talking about bringing back that concept of that spot for an upcoming Apple spot as well.
Did you read about that? I heard that they brought it back for an iPod commercial.
iPod, exactly. Exactly. Let's talk about that in just a minute. We've got a break for the Wacky World of Marketing with Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. Hey, by the way, a good place to go to find out more about the Advertising Show and our guests is theadvertisingshow.com.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing. Wacky World of Marketing. Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our Wacky Update heads to Tokyo, where Reuters reports the Japanese company that came up with the hit bilingual device that translates dogs' barks into human words has now come up with a dream product, literally. Takara Company Limited says its Dream Workshop gadget gives people the chance to do whatever they want to, at least in their dreams. See, before nodding off, the would-be dreamer is supposed to look at a photo of what he or she wants to dream about and then record the storyline on the $140 machine. Using voice recording as well as lights, music, and aromas, the machine stimulates during periods of REM sleep and helps them direct their own dreams. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Here are some most happy fellas, the four lads for Ford.
Standing on the corner, watching all the Fords go by. Standing on the corner, giving all the Fords the eye. Look at it go.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and our special guest, Bernice Kanner. There's a classic spot, a Ford spot from the four lads who are probably still around, huh? Maybe
well,
not.
It's hard to say.
Yeah, really. Bernice was editorial director at the 14-title launch of the Oshkosh B'gosh Children's Book Program, which was endorsed by the National Center for Family Literacy in October of 98. 13 years through 94, Kanner served up an intimate look at the marketing world with her award-winning weekly column for New York Magazine on Madison Avenue, which she created and wrote. So we're happy to have Bernice on the show, The Advertising Show.
She also is the author of Are You Normal About Sex, Love, and Relationships?
That was, yeah.
She's asked me and you to write the foreword when she reissues that book.
No, I asked you to write the foreword about Are You Normal About Money, guys.
Oh, about money. Okay, good.
Yes, well, we're very normal about money. We love every penny we have.
In one word, no.
Yeah.
I want to get your eyes off sex here.
Yes, did you hear that, Brad?
Yeah,
you want
okay.
me to slap him, Bernice? No, I can't do that.
I'm in another room. You know, you
That's
mentioned
a good thing.
You mentioned before the break about the dot-com crash, and you know, I've got my theory on this. I wanted to get your take, Bernice. Do you believe the silly dot-com spots we all saw during the Super Bowl of 2000 and 2001 contributed to the fallout of the dot-com revolution?
Oh, certainly, because they took the height. They were the height of arrogance. They expressed the height of hubris at a time, at an event that everybody was watching. If you score well on the Super Bowl, it has a tremendous return on investment. If you bomb, there's little way you can walk away without major egg on your face. Everybody is watching. And you had 17 dot-com companies in the year 2000 advertising on the Super Bowl. Several of them had put a huge percentage of their initial investment, of their seed money, into running a commercial here, even without a solid business plan or even product. And seven of them were out of business by the close of the year.
It sounds like a trip to Las Vegas, doesn't it?
Well, it's riskier than a trip to Las Vegas,
yeah.
Which, incidentally, Las Vegas is getting around the slap by the NFL. Last year, they weren't allowed to advertise because they connote gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're doing it in an alternate way on an alternate network.
Hmm, interesting.
You know, you mentioned, all eyes on spots, and I agree with you. I believe the public, the investing public, lost faith and lost, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, lost any kind of feeling of security about dot-coms and having seen those spots, and I think that was the beginning of divesting a lot of investment dollars that had been in Wall Street dot-coms prior to that Super Bowl, certainly 2000 and 2001. Is the scrutiny of the creativeness of the ads in the Super Bowl, Bernice, driving some advertisers away?
I don't think that it's driving some advertisers away. I think that the cop attitude, the police worthiness of the CBS in this year Bureau of Standards is what's protecting the public, if you will, from any advertising that they consider to be risky or risque.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we all know the PR value of a great spot that airs in the Super Bowl, and certainly the company that creates a home run as far as a great spot for their client and gets that kind of post-game publicity can be a huge reward, and careers can be actually built on such. But every year it seems like some advertisers commit early and then pull out only because they're worried about that their creative won't hold up.
Well, I think there are lots of reasons that they pull out, but first I wanted to address that by saying Steve Hayden, the guy who created the Apple 1984 commercial, claims that he's been riding on the fumes of it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people pull out for a number of reasons. In 1984, in fact, Apple's board got cold feet at the last minute and ordered Shia Day to sell the 2 minutes. The agency sold one and pretended it couldn't get rid of the other. But there are lots of reasons. Certainly, Screaming Media, which is now which has become Pinnacore and was just recently bought by CBS MarketWatch, for whom I write a column, they decided at the last minute Jay Shiat pulled out of the Super Bowl because it was over-cluttered. So I think that there are lots of reasons. Sometimes it's because people don't have their commercials ready yet. Sometimes it's because they don't have a product ready yet, that they couldn't fulfill the orders that they're expecting. So it's not just that they get cold feet about their creative. There's a whole bunch of reasons why you could decide at the last minute not to run.
Well, I want to go back to what you said about Jay Shiat.
Yeah, we've got less than a minute, too.
Yeah, you mentioned that the Super Bowl was cluttered, and that's why he pulled out. I wasn't clear on that. I mean, how is it any more cluttered one game to the next? And
it was cluttered with dot-com companies.
Oh, I got you.
If you're a dot-com company on that game, you are one of 17, and you get lost in the dot-comness.
Some might argue that with all the dot-com craziness going on, a traditional advertiser in that environment actually stand out.
Well, a traditional advertiser could have stood out then, mm-hmm. and indeed, I believe that was the year that Volkswagen was the only car company mm-hmm. to be on, and it stood out. One year, it certainly was the only car company. In some years, there are 12 car companies on there, and you don't know what you're watching.
Boy, it sounds like a radio stop set, doesn't it? We'll be back in just a minute with Bernice Kanner here on The Advertising Show, along with Bray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, and a conversation with Bernice coming up more in just a minute. Stay with us.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
You love double mint gum. Double good, double mint gum. Double fresh flavor, double smooth too. Double mint, double delightful to chew.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and our special guest, Bernice Kanner, back with another segment here with Bernice out of New York today, where it's cold once again.
Oh, yeah.
There again, it's winter, so it should be cold or something, right?
Bernice, clear up for us, if you would, the use of the word Super Bowl. To promote a business and use it in a commercial way can get you slapped by NFL properties with a huge fine, but yet other places you can use it. How do you delineate when you can use it and when you cannot use it?
Well, I first want to mention that it wasn't called that at the very beginning.
Right.
It was named by somebody whose kid was playing with a Super Bowl. But the NFL licenses the name of that. And, in fact, one year it had let Miller bought the privilege of calling itself Super Bowl. And Budweiser couldn't use the Super Bowl expression at all, couldn't use Super Bowl game. And that was the year that it created the Bud Bowl. To get around, it was a mother of invention kind of thing, to get around the fact that the NFL had licensed the use of the name Super Bowl.
Oh.
So is it only when the Super Bowl licenses it to a particular business category that makes it off limits for any other competitors in that particular category, or does it require a license to make any reference to Super Bowl?
I believe it's a trademark, but that certainly I would use it as a public educational usage.
Right. Which is why we can say it here on the radio and you were able to mention it or use a title in your book.
Unless the thought please show up at my door.
Right. Which if they're wanting your home phone number, cell phone, and an address, they can reach us here at theadvertisingshow.com.
That's fine.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about trivia and the Super Bowl. Not the list you gave me. I have my own questions. You mentioned about the fact that the very first Super Bowl was not called the Super Bowl. How many people out there would be surprised, I think a lot, about the actual first airing of the Super Bowl and that it was actually carried by two networks? Talk a little bit about that, Bernice.
Well, it's interesting. I think it was CBS and NBC, and one of them, they had to do a make-good because it went dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the early days of television in 1967. Mm-hmm. Well, not that early, but...
That's not early.
but early enough that nobody has a tape of the full game.
Right. No kidding.
Trying to research this was not an easy task. Not the later things when there are thousands and thousands of references to it of late. But the early days, there was nothing super about this game. It was the empty seats and run-of-the-mill ads, the day-to-day stuff. There was nothing that was exceptional. Yeah. Joe Namath was the first one who actually made it a contest in the third Super Bowl by boasting that he would win and doing so, and that gave the game itself some validity. But it was really 1984, if you had to do some magical moment, that gave the commercial some validity.
So you alluded to it earlier. Talk a little bit about how the Super Bowl got its name.
How the Super Bowl got its name,
mm-hmm,
itself?
Mm-hmm.
I forget the name of the commissioner of football, but his daughter...
I think it was Pete Rozelle, wasn't it?
I don't think it was Pete Rozelle.
I'll look it up in your book.
His daughter was bouncing a ball, and he just came in one day and said, gee, this is, this is a pretty interesting thing to call it.
Mm-hmm. It was Lamar Hunt, who was the head of the AFL at that time that you refer to in your book.
That's who it was.
Yeah. Lamar Hunt, who also owns the Kansas City Chiefs. But and prior to that, I guess, what did they do? Did they just call it the World Championship game?
I think that's what they called it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when in researching your book, I got to believe that you had a huge undertaking with getting copyright approval and legal rights clearances on all of this wonderful content that you have in here.
You're giving me a headache. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
It was a mammoth project.
Now, who helped you with this undertaking?
Well, I went to all the ad agencies.
Oh, you did? You did it yourself?
Well, I cloned myself for it.
Yeah, I guess. For those that don't, have not picked up this book, I would encourage any of our listeners that whether you just have a distant interest in advertising or, in particular, Super Bowl advertising, it not only is a great reference that is very comprehensive, but more importantly, it has a story behind each one of the commercials that you highlight and showcase in the book, which I found very interesting. You not only find screenshots, frames of the commercial, so it helps remind the reader of the commercials that you're looking at, but it also has a nice little story behind it, and we'll talk about a few of those after the break.
And by the way, you go to BloombergPress.com. You can find out more as well about that book. For Bernice Canner, Ray Shillings, and Brad Forsyth here on the Advertising Show. Back in just a minute.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
I love her.
I feel light as a breeze.
I love her.
I've got Liverpool tea. She loves me.
She puts me at ease.
She loves me.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth back for a final segment this hour, and we we actually ran out of time to talk to Bernice this hour, but we're going to be back next hour. Not a big deal. Hope you can stay with us
so
as well.
So if you stuck around to hear more of Bernice, you're going to have to stick around a little longer.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Nothing wrong. So Bernice, that's a cool-looking book, too. That is really, really neat.
It's a neat book, and if you get a chance, pick one up at your local five and dime.
They're saying that the Super Bowl, the average price of the 30-second spots for the Super Bowl has now jumped 7% there. It's a record-breaking 2.25 mil, solidifying the game's role as the centerpiece of the marketing year.
Mm-hmm. But they say
the marketing universe.
There are a few still left that are going for a little less than that right now.
Well, they said one media buyer who has not bought the game yet, but is heavily courted, prices are negotiable, but they're not diving just yet.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so keep that in mind, okay?
I'm reading 1.8 out there. Now, of course, that's the funny thing about Super Bowl spots. Only the buyer and the seller know for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
And don't forget to negotiate that added value in there, too.
Exactly. The free tickets.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to talk to Bernice when we bring her back next hour, but we have the advertising agent, Bloomberg Press, the Super Bowl of Advertising Cocktails and Commentary. They have an event in New York at the, Bloomberg headquarters,
right.
499 Park Avenue. Here's what's interesting. You see our friend Bob Garfield here?
Yes,
this
Bob.
Is Bob, and over here on the right is Bernice.
Yes.
Underneath Bob's name, Bob Garfield, editor-at-large, advertising age. I wonder how Rance Crane feels about Bob Garfield now being editor-at-large, because he's not editor-at-large. That's it's editor-in-chief is Rance Crane. He must have gotten a promotion or something, because he's columnist.
He got a promotion, but probably didn't get any more money.
Well, that's
it's
true.
One of those things. Hey, Bob, we want you to take on these added responsibilities, but we can't pay any more right now.
Yeah.
But you're going to feel good about it, right?
And if you're listening, you cannot use this tape. As part of your hey, look at this, Ray. National Organization for Women.
Okay. Do you want to do your badvertising before we do that, though?
Well, those now women, you know, they're always up in arms. Let's do the badvertising.
Yeah, because we're going to run out of time before
right.
we do that, so
you're
here
right.
we go.
And now it's time for the badvertising item of the week.
I get a chance to preface this, but badvertising is simply a look at advertising that's not good. As opposed to good advertising.
Which is?
Which is good.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You know, to see a weight loss commercial during the month of January is hardly something unusual, right, Ray?
Yeah, right.
So
you got to see all the people at the gym, too.
It caught my eye. They're having specials at the gym right now, by the way.
Right.
It caught my eye recently with a celebrity endorsement for SlimFast. We're going to get into the who in a moment. Maybe you've seen the spot. We've discussed on the show, of course, numerous times that the average celebrity endorsement is just that. Unfortunately, fairly average because it lacks the relevancy many times that an advertiser's brand needs to make the connection for the consumer. For example, Nike and their golf apparel. There's no better choice than Tiger Woods, right? We've talked often about whether Tiger Woods is a great endorsement for Buick. That may be a bit of a stretch. But in any case, SlimFast, I seriously question the choice of Whoopi Goldberg as celebrity spokesperson.
I've seen the ads, yeah.
Yeah, and granted, Whoopi, you know, there's no doubt she can, you know, spare to shed a few pounds, and that's fine. But I just, you know, have a problem with it because I think most consumers, when they look at a celebrity endorser, especially for a product like that, they are expecting maybe a more attractive, beautiful version that's going to transform themselves mm-hmm. after using the particular product. So, you know, if you've seen the spot, you see Whoopi grabbing her trousers and yanking them forward, which shows.
Gee, we've never seen that in an ad before, have we?
Well, not with Whoopi. No. And it shows a bit of a gap in her pants, and she basically is asking, you know, as she looks into the camera, I'm going to lose weight, join in with me.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, look at Weight Watchers, just to draw an example. When they selected Princess Sarah Ferguson,
right.
Now, there's a great choice because we know she's going to evolve into an attractive person as she loses the weight. So consumers, I think, need to see that the celebrity endorser who is, in effect, demoing the success of the product with SlimFast or service with the case of Weight Watchers is actually going to beautify and improve themselves as they appear in future commercials because basically they're showing the dramatical improvements that the product will impart to the consumer. SlimFast brand, I believe, has a real challenge on their hands to impart any positive brand attributes to the consumer through the use of Whoopi Goldberg, and that's just my opinion. And sorry, Whoopi, but you know, can you imagine Whoopi walking down the aisle with a beautiful long gown and saying, "I'm now a svelte, 110,"
right?
And then people
right.
sit back and go, "Wow, you know, Whoopi, she's always been such a beautiful, elegant person. I just don't see that. She's a comedian.
She's a comedian.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Doesn't necessarily fit the role, but who knows? They probably did a focus group on that. What do you think, Brad?
I will. Yeah.
That's what they did.
I'll tell you this, though. Princess Sarah Ferguson has remained beautiful, and she's a great spokesperson for Weight Watchers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so many years ago, they had us on the radio doing the Nutrisystem spots. Well, that's a dangerous thing to do, too, when you promote stuff. Well, look at the Metabolife stuff that's been going on. That was all over the radio. Now, and now Metabolife is being sued out the wazoo.
Pulling Ephedra off the market as well.
Ephedra, it's
crazy.
So you got to be careful when you endorse something. Boy, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show. You'll find us online at the Advertising Show. com, and that's where you can email your questions and also find out who was on the show. And actually, right after this show, you'll be able to pick up the show as an archive copy, an audio CD, or whatever you want to save it as. So that's pretty cool, too. Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. Back next hour.
Welcome to the Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
For hour number two of the Advertising Show, hope you were with us for hour number one. If you did, you heard us talk to Bernice Canner, a marketing expert, author, and editor, written many of books and done many, many things. One of the books we're talking about today is The Super Bowl of Advertising, How the Commercials Won the Game, amongst other things, too. With Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, the Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. Back with hour two, we've got Mary Lou Quinlan, and she's going to talk about how they wooed the folks to buy stuff for the holidays with those last-minute sales. Andy Borowitz is with us this hour. And let's see, who else do we have? We've got the Wacky World of Marketing with Bruce Abbott and more.
So, I love it when you get wooed.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's a generational thing, I think.
How often do you get wooed nowadays?
Oh, it depends on who you're wooing. No, who the wooey is.
Wooey or wooer, yeah.
Wooey. Not whoopee, wooey.
Hey, do you remember, I guess it was 6 months ago, we were talking about how great Wayne Brady was doing with his show. In fact, he had won all of those Emmys.
Is it gone now?
Well, Buena Vista has decided not to renew the Wayne Brady show for a third season. The show will remain in production through the rest of the year, but original episodes will be running through the end of the season. You may recall Wayne Brady launched in national syndication just as recent as September 03, after spending a year in a slow rollout with ABC-owned radio stations. The show averaged its best rating ever, Ray, the week of December 28th, hitting a 1.3, not that great, national household rating, according to Nielsen, largely fueled by a guest appearance by who? American Idol winner Reuben Studdard.
Really?
Yeah. So next season, the ABC and owned radio or TV stations, rather, will pick up Buena Vista's new offering, which sets your TiVos, folks, the Tony Danza show. I'm serious.
Right.
And then they'll blow him out in a few years and, you know, have somebody else.
A few?
Yeah. Well, joining the cancellation crowd will be, in addition to Wayne Brady, crossing over with John Edwards. Now, shouldn't he have known that already, since he can see into the future?
He should have made all that money up front and got out,
Well, he's
now in Argentina.
He didn't have enough dead people around him that told him you're about to get canceled. and then the John Walsh Show is the guy that is producer behind America's Most Wanted, I believe.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
So he's off, too.
All three of those.
How big?
Wayne Brady, John, and John.
If they can get rid of the reality shows, that'd be a good thing, too. Thank you.
Well, are you following The Apprentice?
No.
Have you seen any of it?
No.
The second episode just ran earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who was on it?
Who?
Donnie Deutsch.
Oh, really?
Donnie Deutsch with Trump. Trump has been all over television lately. This past week he was on Stern, and then he was on Leno. But he teams up with Deutsch last week for the second episode, as I mentioned, on The Apprentice. And basically employees were asked to create this ad campaign, and then Donnie judged it. He judges it to determine whether it's a good campaign or not. It's interesting. You know, Donnie Deutsch, of course, chairman and founder of Deutsch Inc., and he has done Deutsch Worldwide. And, of course, he's also claimed to fame as a guest here on the Advertising Show.
And a co-host for a show on what?
CNBC.
CNBC, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mary Lou Quinlan joins us now here on the Advertising Show.
And now, stay tuned for What Women Want.
insights from listening to your most powerful customer. Here's Mary Lou Quinlan.
Gotta do a post-mortem on holiday shopping. This year, the retailers thought that they could outsmart the shoppers, a.k.a. women. As usual, they tried to trick women into thinking that Christmas started in July. Emails and catalogs warned us that we'd better shop now. While buying Halloween stuff, I picked up my Christmas cards to the tune of Winter Wonderland. So I guess this early bird strategy worked for some. But most women just waited. Next came the price threats. This will be the last big discount day before the holiday. Well, the second to the last. Now this is the really big one. Tick, tick, tick. Women waited. Some malls tried to sweeten the pot by adding concierges to carry packages. They should have carried pocket radar to indicate where the biggest bargains were. Women even outwaited last year's last-minute rush. More women than ever bought online where the discounts were better, while others decided to wait till after the 25th to open their wallets. To make their numbers look good, retailers countered by counting holiday revenues as anything bought by early January. How to appeal to women next holiday? If consumer confidence stays on this pokey pace of recovery, price will still be king or queen. Retailers must recognize that busy women will shop any way and anytime they like. Help her buy the whole thing on Christmas Eve if that's what she wants. That's when she needs that concierge to carry her bags, even drive a truck full to her house. Hey, didn't someone used to do that on a sleigh?
This has been What Women Want from The Advertising Show with your host, Mary Lou Quinlan, CEO of Just Ask a Woman. To learn more about what women want, visit justaskawoman.com.
This is Mary Lou Quinlan reminding you, if you want to know what women want, stop selling and start listening.
Sounds like Mary Lou had a good Christmas, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. She probably got everything she wanted.
Got everything.
And
she was
a little bit more
on her best behavior.
Yes, she was. Bernice Canner just about to join us here on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. This is the low-carb edition, by the way.
That's true. All protein all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, before we ended last hour, I was mentioning about the National Organization for Women.
Yeah.
They've come up with their list about what to watch out for and listen to and view on the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And we're going to talk to Bernice about this. She mentioned last hour about the USA Today's ad meter, which is a
– The ad meter?
Yeah. USA Today does this deal every year. We'll talk more about it in detail. But it basically gives a – yeah, it gives a ranking of the TV spots that you see in the Super Bowl. But the feminist – Super Bowl ad watch. They call it the feminist Super Bowl ad watch.
Mm-hmm.
They do a little thing online and they want to let you know what they, the National Organization of Women, believe are some of the better and not so good TV spots from the now angle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, they're always so damn angry.
What about...
You know, I mean, really.
No, they're nice. Very nice
Well, they're
people.
Like those...
Brad said that,
mentioned a long time ago that they're like the... you know, they're like those runway models that never smile, and you said, well, all they got to do is eat, and they'd be a little more happy. You know, they get that mean look nowadays.
Yeah, they do. Well, that's just the look. That's the way they sell clothes, I guess.
I think it's to get you to look away from their face and look at their
look
clothes.
Look at their clothes?
Yeah. But then when you look at their clothes, it's like they're so skinny in there. It's like, what are we doing here?
That's a real good way to put it. Speaking of clothes, Hummer has gotten into the marketing of clothes. Did you see that?
I saw that.
Not only clothes, but also lifestyle type stuff. They've got waterproof outdoor boots, shearling boots, and slippers. It's, as they said, Hummer is a lifestyle brand. And if they're saying that's a lifestyle brand, would that be the next thing that you would get is like Hummer toothpaste and like Hummer laxative?
Yeah, and what would it take? Would it be kind of like lava soap?
I guess it would do something. Sure.
You want it rough, you know.
It would have to be square and a little bit edgy.
I don't know about that line extension of that particular brand. It'll be interesting to see if it goes well. I did see those boots. They do look rough and tough, and I guess in keeping with the Hummer image.
Good ad, too. The ad says it's recommended that you change your socks every 3,000 miles.
Which is right
too,
up there with how you and I do it.
Exactly. Don't you just change them when you get a hole in it?
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Bernice Canner on the way on the Advertising Show and back in just a minute.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Mm-hmm. The Del Monte tomato sauce, sir. Shall I ring it up?
Yes, thank you.
14 cans.
Yes, they're great Christmas stocking stuffers.
Christmas?
Oh, I know I'm rushing the season, but those green Del Monte cans and the bright red tomatoes, handsome, inexpensive.
I see, and then you use them for the cooking afterwards.
Cooking?
Sir, Del Monte tomato sauce is meant for cooking.
Not just for nice red and green Christmas stocking stuffers.
This is the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, and a classic spot. That was a Dick and Bert spot for Del Monte, which makes very good Cajun stewed tomatoes, by the way.
Hmm.
Very good. It makes a good salsa.
You're right? Sure to get a case.
That'd be great.
From Del Monte?
Sure, no problem. Bernice Canner, our special guest. Bernice is a marketing expert, author, and editor. Let's see. What can we tell you about Bernice that you didn't hear the first hour?
Well, if you weren't here, you didn't hear any of it.
Well, but I still got to tell something different, because
okay.
Just in case they were, you know.
Well, stay away from that sex book.
Bernice wrote a column in the New York Daily News, was a senior editor at Ad Age, editor of Medical Dimensions magazine, and writer at the JWT Ad Agency. So we're talking to Bernice in New York this weekend, and Bernice, glad to have you on the Advertising Show for one more hour.
Thank you.
You know, Bernice, Ray mentioned you worked for JWT, J. Walter Thompson, as a writer. Any things you penned that we would know about?
This is so many years ago that
okay.
You wouldn't remember.
We're
them.
Familiar with Bosco and various other types of the slinky you might have been involved with. I'm just throwing these out to you. The hula hoop. Jump on any of those.
It's a papyrus.
A papyrus? What the heck is that?
Television.
Naugahyde. Anyway.
She didn't do the Naugahyde. We know that one.
Yeah, that's George Lois.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about the Super Bowl. I think you are the expert, certainly for Super Bowl. Before I ask my question, how intense has your life been for the last few weeks? Have all the media companies been wanting to spend some time with you on camera and on the air?
Well, I've been spending a good part of my day on interviews, but I have two other books coming out in the next 6 months.
Well, go ahead. Do us a shameless plug real quick.
That I've had to pay attention to, so I've been focusing on that, and then I'm writing another one. So I can say that my day has been nicely packed.
Well, and I happen to know that one of your books is about marketing to women. Go ahead and plug that book that you're working on.
Well, that one's coming out in April. It's McGraw-Hill Ad Age, and it's Pocketbook Power, Marketing to the World's Most Coveted Consumers, and that's about women.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that is, of course, Are You Normal About Sex, Love, and Relationships?
There we go again.
Yes, she brought it up this time, too.
Yeah. There we go again. Sorry. Could you send Ray and I a copy of that book when you get it?
If you behave yourself.
Okay, well, I guess we're not going to get a copy then, right?
Speak for yourself, Brad.
I guess your book coming up about marketing to women is along the lines of what Mary Lou Quinlan has published last year with Just Ask a Woman, and you're both, I guess, targeting the same market there and getting good information out about women and how to market to women, because I think that's an underreported on, underutilized marketing tool that a lot of people avoid. Let's talk about, not avoid, but don't take advantage of. Let's talk about the Super Bowl. Among many creative critiques for Super Bowl spots, perhaps, I guess, Bernice, the best well-known would be what, USA Today's Ad Meter?
Well, I think that traditionally has been, but I believe that AOL is in line to steal their thunder a bit. They'll be running, not just are they halftime sponsors this year, but they'll be running a meter, a log-on meter that will be posting the results that will be millions of people compared to a few hundred that USA Today survey.
Well, that's the big, criticism of the USA Today's ad meter, because it's hundreds of viewers that watch the game that are under the supervision of USA Today that rate the Super Bowl in-game commercials versus, I guess, hundreds of thousands, are we going to say, for AOL?
Well, AOL ran a very short commercial in the last quarter last year asking people just to log on, not to vote, but to see the commercials, and they had a couple of million.
Wow.
So now that they're doing halftime and inviting people, and they'll be doing a playback of all the commercials with commentary, I think that they'll get quite a bit more than what they got the first time.
Is there any one category, Bernice, of business that tends to dominate the Super Bowl as far as advertisers?
Well, I think that Anheuser-Busch always is the biggest advertiser, or it varies with Pepsi. So the two of them almost always run the most commercials. And this year, I believe that it's the same, that Anheuser-Busch will have 5 minutes and Pepsi three. Mm-hmm. So that's major representation. The card companies are usually in. You've got Visa and MasterCard. Cars, oddly, I say this because even though it's a product that most men are in some way related to buying, it's not car season. Car season is really in the fall when the new models come out.
But yet demographically, viewership of the Super Bowl is not that highly skewed to men, is it? I mean, it's closer.
Oh, absolutely not. 40% of the viewers are women, which is why you have this year Procter & Gamble coming in with Charmin the first time. And men do not buy the toilet paper.
Right.
At least we don't admit it.
Well, we use whatever's in front of us.
Exactly.
But,
and you leave the seat up.
Exactly. Well, Ray does. You know, I was going to ask you, has there ever been any studies conducted of the party noise or the sobriety of viewers during the Super Bowl?
There's a lot of myth that this is the biggest party occasion other than my mind is slipping here, other than the one St. Patrick's Day that people tend to imbibe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the second biggest party occasion to New Year's. So we do know that. We know that a lot of home parties, a lot of people watch it together. This is not something that you're watching by yourself. There's a lot of that going on there. So there's the camaraderie. It's the one time when advertising is not the enemy. Advertising is the friend, that people are watching as much for the ads as they're watching for the athletes. They're not going to the bathroom. They're not going to the fridge during the commercials. Indeed, they're going during the action, during the NFL game. And that there's a lot of water cooler chat about the commercials afterward, giving it a lot more halo than the pure dollars and cents buy. But still, people call it the ego bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they really do. And I guess what I've seen lately, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like everyone advertising today in the Super Bowl tries to be funny. I mean, there's no more... No more straightforward type messages. You gotta be funny, and humor seems to take the front seat with creative executions. Do you agree with that?
I'm not sure. I think that the Clydesdales are not funny, that they're lovely. I think that you've had humor certainly sells, but Visa recently went for, with a little girl and an elephant, kind of a sentiment, warm sentiment. Certainly MasterCard uses a sentiment more than humor. And for years, MasterLock has used a very vivid image, a shotlock image, more of a surprise or a scare-the-pants-off-you kind of approach. And that worked for them for 21 years.
Yeah, and just the big deal on that, for those that may not be aware, is the lion's share of their ad budget for the entire year was focused on their Super Bowl, buying media time as well as the production of their spot. And the rest of the year, they had just a pittance of dollars to spend the rest of their 12 months, and they did quite well with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah.
So let's talk more about that after the break, huh, Ray?
I think it'd be a good thing to do,
since we have
the fact
this music
that we have
coming
that space
on.
And
yeah,
the, there.
That's
and, you know, if we had nothing there, that might be a little
well,
bit boring.
Well, that's true.
Bernice Canner is our special guest on the advertising show, and we're talking about the Super Bowl. You know, Houston, our hometown here, lots of plans and things going on here in the background to make sure the city is in perfect shape for the bowl. And it's real interesting to see how some of the local media has gotten involved in the Super Bowl as well for specifically, well, here in Houston, it's Channel 11, KHOU Television.
The CBS affiliate.
CBS affiliate. Mm-hmm. So they're really doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes.
But there's others
there
that are jumping on it.
Oh, yeah.
Just because you're not CBS doesn't mean you can't join the hype.
Advertising show. We got the Wacky World of Marketing coming up next, and more with Bernice Canner in just a minute. Stay with us.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing. Wacky World of Marketing. Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our Wacky Update heads to London, where Reuters reports, A shock jock he wasn't, but Prime Minister Tony Blair's self-hosted radio phone-in show was so smooth, some listeners suggested he consider a career in radio. The Prime Minister, after an hour live on the air, the one who supporters say is the most media-savvy politician in British history, sounded almost, well, professional.
This is Tony Blair on LBC 97.3, taking your calls till 11.
You can almost hear it, can't you?
More of your calls after the break.
And, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and, unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
There's just one Schlitz, yeah, nothing else comes near. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer. Just one beer fits, yeah, this great one here. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer.
Well, you know, it's not the Super Bowl weekend, but it's close enough.
Time
for a beer commercial, right?
Yeah.
And our special guest today, Bernice Canner on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Talking about the Super Bowl here with Bernice Canner, author of The Super Bowl of Advertising. Bernice, tell me, Super Bowl really is a convergence of the advertising business and show business, I guess, and nothing has gone unsponsored this year on the Super Bowl as it would in times past. But yet, will there ever be a time that you think we'll see product placement make it into the Super Bowl?
They say not. The NFL says not, but I'm not so sure. I think that product placement has already made it. You've seen the cars on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the ball that they play with will be up for grabs. Then anything that's sellable will be sold.
Mm-hmm. You know, last hour you talked about the 1984 being the showcase spot of the history of the Super Bowl, and one that certainly anyone over 40 would remember, the spot for Macintosh by Apple. Is there any buzz around right now with regard to this upcoming Super Bowl about an upcoming advertiser we might be familiar with or be looking out for?
Well, I think what's interesting is that Procter & Gamble is going to be doing a Charmin commercial, and that's for women. And that it's not that the execution will be so riveting. It's that a toilet paper commercial has never run here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's interesting. Budweiser hasn't finished. They typically finish the day or two before Super Bowl, so they haven't decided what they're going to run yet. And indeed, most of the advertisers have not finished shooting their commercials.
Is that right? Only a few weeks before the Super Bowl, and they're still finishing up their production?
Only a few days before the Super Bowl, they're still finishing it. I'm always staggered by that,
yeah,
year after year.
Yeah,
I can only think that that's something, a planned delay. They don't want anybody else to know what's going on. That'll leak out.
Well, you know, as you know, and as you note in your book, Bernice, many, many companies begin their effort in drumming up new ideas and concepts for creative for Super Bowl spots midsummer prior to the year prior. So, you know, although there will always be those latecomers and those that work the 11th hour to try to get it right, I suppose. One of the questions that I had for you in the category of trivia was you'd mentioned in your book, and I hope I'm not catching you off guard here, but there's a funny story about a kickoff in an early, it wasn't even called Super Bowl then, in an early game that had to be re-kicked because the TV viewers had not made it back out of commercial.
Yeah, I think they had, I think it was a Winston commercial, if my mind is not lapsing on me, that had to be replayed because it was dark when they had to replay the kick,
mm-hmm,
is what happened.
Right.
They had to replay the game as opposed to lose the commercial.
Right. It was, as you say in your book, it was Vince Lombardi and the Green Bay Packers had to re-kick because the TV audience had not made it back in time to see the kickoff. And they, again, as you mentioned in your book, the officials blew the ball dead and had to tee it up and kick it all over again. And needless to say,
take two.
Coach Lombardi was a little PO'd about that.
Well, he didn't understand that the game was all about the commercial.
Exactly.
Now they know that.
Right. They stand around and it's called a TV timeout, and we get the Gatorade green bottles out and spray water in their mouth.
Once they understand their props, they'll get it right.
Yeah, well, what is the most obscure or strange advertiser to air during the Super Bowl?
Oh, there have been a lot of them. I think the Just for Feet commercial, which was a shoe retailer, where you had four white guys in a Humvee chasing a black barefoot Kenyan runner and lacing shoes on his feet after drugging him. That was sort of an obscure thing. I think the Truth campaign that ran last year, the American Legacy Foundation, was kind of an oddball.
Mm-hmm.
You've had some small players like the mailboxes and Master Lock, obscure, not certainly, but small. Mm-hmm. And, of course, all of the .com were somewhat obscure come and goes. So those were unusual. I think Oxygen breaking, airing the Woman's Network mm-hmm. on Super Bowl was an unusual move because they could have played it anywhere. And they certainly confirmed that women were watching.
But, you know, on the other hand, they paid a pretty penny to reach that 40% female segment of the overall audience for the Super Bowl. And I agree with you. I think Oxygen, although they made a splash there, I don't know if Oprah Winfrey was still was involved with that network at that time. But I questioned the strategy behind that. But you mentioned Mailbox. I assume you're talking about Mailbox, et cetera?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which, again, that struck me as kind of strange as far as strategy as well. I'm wondering, was that a one-time?
No, I think they did it for 2 or 3 years.
Oh, did they?
And then the Tabasco McElhenney, the Tabasco company.
Yeah.
Right.
Which had very, very spectacular commercials of the pizza, the sauce setting pizza on fire and... those were just terrific. And then Dirt Devil, vacuum cleaner. That was an interesting one with Fred Astaire dancing with a vac.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. We got to take a break here for just a moment, and we'll finish up our final segment here with Bernice Canner on the Advertising Show. And in Mailboxes, et cetera, is no longer even Mailboxes, et cetera. It's now UPS Store.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
Go figure. So something different there. Got to take a break. Come back in just a minute and hear more with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and Bernice Canner out of New York on the Advertising Show.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
B.J. Thomas. There's a whole new way of living. Pepsi helps supply the drive. It's got a lot to give to those who like to live, 'cause Pepsi helps them come alive.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. One of the many personalities that supported that product. That's got to be like a 1970s commercial, I would imagine, for Pepsi.
B.J.
Yeah, B.J. Exactly.
B.J. Thomas.
And Bernice Canner back with us here for one final segment on The Advertising Show.
You know, in your book, The Super Bowl of Advertising, Bernice, your foreword is written by Phil Dusenberry, former chairman of BBDO, as well as Ted Sand, current chairman and chief creative officer of BBDO. And they mention how the Super Bowl is one opportunity for advertisers to shine. The Super Bowl audience is certainly ready and willing to absorb your brand message. As long as, I guess, you give something back, as long as it entertains. When the Super Bowl cuts away for a local break, and we see local advertisers, which happens, I guess, once or twice a quarter, airing the same creative that they've been running throughout the regular time period, why do you think so many local advertisers don't really get it when it comes to the Super Bowl and advertising opportunities that they're paying so dearly for?
Well, they're not paying so dearly for it if they're running in a local venue. They're paying a small premium, but they're running locally. To them, it's pure local shot.
Right. It's all relative, though. For example, in Houston, and I did a little checking just as a a reference down here in Houston. The spots were running around $125,000, $135,000 for a 30, and between $135,000 and $150,000 for Dallas market on a local basis. And that's, you know, although it's a decent-sized audience in both of those local markets, it's still a fairly high unit cost for a TV spot. And I'm wondering, why wouldn't a local advertiser try to do something different or unique as a as they debut on a Super Bowl?
Well, one would hope that they would, and certainly that's how Joe Izuza, the liar, got started as a local spot that was different.
Mm-hmm.
But 9 out of 10 commercials that you see are humdrum, run-of-the-mill things, and a local marketer doesn't usually have a lot of money to put together a $1 million ad.
Right. No, I understand that. In New York, being the mecca of advertising up there, do you see during local breaks local advertisers doing something a little different or trying to get a little different spin or execution on their creative than they do normally?
What you see most here are promotions for the network.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to local ads.
Hmm.
You don't see a lot of local ads.
Hmm. That's interesting. Will you TiVo the Super Bowl this year just to review all the spots? Is that what you do?
Well, I will certainly tape the ads and review it, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you do that every year, I assume?
Well, I don't do it every year. I get it every year afterward. But this year, because I'll be commentating on it, I'll be taping it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, just real quickly, because you do have another book and a wonderfully written book in the 100 Best TV Commercials, and more importantly, the subtitle and why they worked, which again is a great commentary that not only features your selection of 100 Best TV Commercials, but some content about why they worked. Were there any fallout as far as other agencies when they found that they were not included in your top 100?
When you talk about the 100 best TV commercials?
Yeah.
Well, that was Leo Burnett and 6,000 people from various agencies around the world had put together that list.
Mm-hmm.
I just added my own commercials that I thought they had missed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
any agencies contact you after your book was published and said, hey, I think mine should have been in your list?
Well, people tell you all the time that they think they're terrific, but...
So we won't see you.
No doubt they are.
Yeah, well, I understand, but I would think that a lot of agencies would want to be included in your top 100 because, you know, after all, although I know it's not your top 100, but it's a list that was compiled by you, and I think a lot of agencies probably get a little jealous when they find that they weren't included in your top 100 list.
Well, I'm not trying to cause anybody pain.
Well, I am. You know, I want to see you and Bob Garfield walk down Madison Avenue at 5 p.m.
Arm in arm.
On a Friday.
Well, we'll do it. We're doing it on a Wednesday.
Yeah, I noticed that.
The Ad Age Bloomberg party.
Well, I want to bring that up since you bring it up. The Super Bowl of Advertising Cocktails and Commentary will be held Wednesday, January 21st at the Bloomberg headquarters at 499 Park Avenue in New York. And, of course, not only Bob Garfield and you, Bernice, but Stuart Elliott, New York Times advertising columnist, and your buddy Ted San, who is chairman and chief creative officer at BBDO New York. By the way, you have a great publicist in Roy Elvo, who got us cooked together to do this show today, Bernice, and I wanted to thank Roy publicly as well, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much.
On the advertising show, Bernice Canner, go to BloombergPress.com to find out more, or you can find her here at the advertising show as well. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forrest, back in just a minute.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is the Advertising Show.
You know me. Would you believe I'm Bugs Bunny? I'm also the voice of many other cartoon characters. But in here, they don't care if I'm Elmer Fudd. So I carry an American Express card, the one card I need for travel and entertaining, for business and pleasure. Why, without this, the only way I'd get any attention is by saying, that's all, folks.
To apply for a card, call 800.
This is the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And thanks again to Bernice Canner, the author of The Super Bowl of Advertising, as we get things in gear for the Super Bowl here. Are you planning a party? Are you going to the game?
Usually, no. No, I mean, somebody went off.
You didn't get that with your season ticket package?
We were thinking we might be drawn because season ticket holders do get in the drawing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But
yeah.
It's just a handful, and no, yeah. We didn't get drawn.
That's too bad.
But if we get last-minute invitation, we will be there.
Yeah,
we will go to the NFL Experience, which is going to be downtown Houston.
Okay, that'll be good.
Should be.
A lot of cool things going on with Super Bowl. It was good to talk to Bernice. We've got Jeff Blackman up next week. He's the author of Stop Whining, Start Selling. What's that all about?
Selling.
Selling and not whining.
True.
Dang.
You know, who doesn't sell in today's business community? And if you're a media salesperson or if you buy media or if you sell, you know, advertising, marketing-related services, and if you're in the advertising business, who doesn't?
Hmm.
You know, last time I checked, people aren't falling through your front door to do business with you, Ray. You have to go out and reach out to them and touch someone.
Right.
Anyway, it's about selling, and we're going to bring that on into the world of advertising.
Good deal.
Yeah.
We talked about the low-carb addition to of the show, which is true. It is, right?
We're all protein
drinking,
all the time.
Water. I'm drinking a diet soda.
Well, it's kind of water. It's got a little tint to it.
What's going on with these restaurants, though? Restaurants hoping to gain at the expense of consumers' unwanted pounds are piling on diet-friendly marketing programs and menu items, with some estimates finding that roughly half of the double-digit sales gains at like the burger biggies like Wendy's and McDonald's come from low-fat entrees and side salads. Others are racing to get into the act. Now, listen to this. Burger King this past week became the latest to launch a bunless sandwich for consumers. What the heck do you do? They give you the piece of meat in your palm and say, here, have a burger.
And, you know, without the bun, it probably cost extra. It's like having your TV, your telephone not listed. You know, it cost extra.
Without a bun, does that mean you could put ketchup and mayo on it? I guess not.
Yeah.
A bunless sandwich? Give me a break.
That's thinking really way too far outside the
bun. Outside the bun, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, let's, by the way, there's been another capture this past week here. You may have not heard it. You know, they got Saddam.
Of course.
Hope you do, and they put him somewhere, I think. In cold storage.
Who else they have?
Well, let's listen.
Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for The Advertising Show. And now, here's this week's feature from The Borowitz Report.
Former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill was captured this past week in a surprise raid on the CBS studios in New York, the Pentagon confirmed. We got him, a coolly confident Vice President Dick Cheney announced to the press moments after Mr. O'Neill was apprehended. At a Pentagon briefing, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld said that the military determined Mr. O'Neill's whereabouts after seeing promos for his 60 Minutes interview during the Indianapolis Colts-Kansas City Chiefs playoff game. According to Secretary Rumsfeld, Special Forces operatives swarmed over the 60 Minutes set shortly after 7 o'clock, accidentally grabbing Andy Rooney before releasing him and then nabbing Mr. O'Neill. Hours later, images were beamed around the world showing the former Treasury Secretary being examined by a military doctor and being checked for lice. Defending the decision to seize Mr. O'Neill, Mr. Rumsfeld said that the Patriot Act permits former cabinet members who make insulting remarks about the White House to be arrested and detained forever. Maybe Mr. Jerky should have thought twice before shooting off his mouth, eh? Mr. Rumsfeld chuckled. Speaking from the Summit of Americas in Mexico, President George W. Bush greeted the news of Mr. O'Neill's capture with a buoyant, good riddance. Arguing that the world is a safer place with Mr. O'Neill in custody, Mr. Bush added, Mr. Paul O'Neill is no longer free to call people blind and deaf who are not actually blind and or deaf. In other news, preliminary reports sent back by the Mars rover this past week indicated that Mars tastes like chicken.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of The Borowitz Report from The Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to BorowitzReport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying,
keep it fake, baby.
I thought that was really important news, too.
Yeah,
I
was
we shared that with the world.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, Paul O'Neill.
Yeah, did you see that on 60
Minutes? He's in the cell next to Saddam.
Yeah. I wonder if they have a tongue depressor and checking his
sure
mouth.
Sure do.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, I forgot to mention to Bernice when we had her on, and I guess she'll just have to learn this from listening to the archive of the show at theadvertisingshow.com, but she has a typo on her Test Your Knowledge of Super Bowl Facts that she sends
she
out
does.
With her book. Well, I think it is. You tell me. Okay. One of her trivia things here is partygoers consume 14,500 tons of chips. Now, here's where we get into the, I think, questionable information here. And more alcohol than on any other day than New Year's Day and St. Patrick's Day. Doesn't she mean New Year's Eve? Because New Year's Day, you're not consuming a lot of liquor.
No, you're not.
You're kind of hung over, I would say. So it should be New Year's Eve and St. Patrick's Day.
She'd probably say...
Oh,
bread.
I was talking about the chips.
No, you're the only person that would catch
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well.
No, that's good, though. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
What kind of chips? Are they have ridges or just
well,
flat
it just
one?
Says 14,500 tons.
Next week, it's Jeff Blackman, author of Stop Whining and Start Selling, which is a good thing to do, okay?
Sure.
Thanks again to Bernice, the advertising show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. As Brad mentioned, we've got the archive, just moments away of this particular show, you can pick that up on the web at theadvertisingshow.com, and you can also keep in touch with us, too. Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show. See you next week. It's a Big Radio Midgets production.